facing and being rid of the things that are blocking us from God at each moment. But it's really about fear and how we manage fear in terms of how we get relief from it. It's great stuff. For those listening, I screwed up the microphone. I guess I broke it yesterday. So Patty's ordering a new one. So I'll try not to move the pages too much tonight, because when we started, I recorded here. And then we had people doing the pages, and people listening said there was too much noise. So we'll get a new microphone. Amazon is very reliable. And anyway, tonight we're going to cover two employers. And I want to thank Mark again for changing my mind. I didn't used to cover wives, family afterwards, two employers. I did a vision for you. And I was studying this information today, and it's really powerful stuff. It's on page 136, so Jimmy's not here, but make sure you tell him I gave you the page. And it was written by a man named Hank Parkhurst, HP was his initials, and if you look at the original manuscript, each page had HP under it. He initialed it, and then it would go to the printer. And the original manuscript is a mess. All these cross-outs and things written in the margin, that's the way it went. When they actually took the manuscript to the people who were going to type it, Bill, Hank, and someone else, they stayed in a motel nearby so they could go every day and help the printer figure out what they'd actually written. And he was a very powerful member of the society in terms of it was really his efforts that got the book published. He came up with the Works Publishing Company and sold stock in the Works Publishing Company for $25. And that's how they got the money to print the book. It's quite a story on how the book got printed. And he was one of the first members of the New York group with Bill Wilson. And so we owe a lot to him. Unfortunately, I understand that he was an alcoholic. He had some issues. And he got in a conflict with some people in New York, and I don't know if he really stayed in AA his whole life. I don't know what happened to him after 3 or 4 years. But during that period of time, in 1937 to 39, God worked in this group of people to get this book published. Now, a lot of people like the 12 and 12. It's a great book. But it was written 14 years later by one man. And this book is written by many people, put it, this together. And those who studied a lot, the hand of God is in this book. This is a very spiritual book. And this message to the employers is really, should be called Further Understanding of Alcoholism, and how you work with the alcoholic and how the alcoholic looks. And there are a lot of spiritual principles in this. It's really powerful stuff. And I was going to go through and just pick out the key phrases. But after reading it, I think we're just going to read it. We'll spend a couple weeks on it. It's great stuff. It says, among many employers nowadays, we think of one member who spent much of his life in the world of big business. He has hired and fired hundreds of men. He knows the alcoholic as the employer sees him. His present views ought to prove exceptionally useful to businessmen everywhere. This Hank Parkhurst was a very prominent, very successful businessman. He was in GE and was one of Thomas Edison's top guys. And so he's writing this. I was at one time assistant manager of a corporation employing 6,600 men. One day my secretary came in saying that Mr. B insisted on speaking with me. I told her to say that I was not interested. I had warned him several times that he had but one more chance. Always give him one more chance. Not long afterwards, he had called me from Hartford on two successive days, so drunk he could hardly speak. I told him he was through finally and forever. Anybody relate to any of that? My secretary returned to say that it was not Mr. B, it was Mr. B's brother, and he wished to give me a message. I still expected a plea for clemency, but these words came through the receiver. I just wanted to tell you Paul jumped from a hotel window in Hartford last Saturday. He left us a note saying you were the best boss he ever had and you were not to blame in any way. Cunning, baffling, powerful, and fatal. Mm-hmm. I was reminded of that just a few days ago when I got a call that one of our members who came here for a while, he died at home of alcoholism. Another time, as I opened a letter which lay on my desk, a newspaper clipping fell out. It was the obituary of one of the best salesmen I ever had. After 2 weeks of drinking, he had placed his toe on the trigger of a loaded shotgun. The barrel was in his mouth. I had discharged him for drinking 6 weeks before. You know, we have people come in here and some of them don't make it and they do die. But we forget how many never get in here and die. Mm-hmm. You know, being in the medical profession, it's unbelievable how many people have died of this disease. That leads me to, I had a really great experience the other day. I saw in Hy-Vee, Margie, and she just celebrated her 7 years, and Matt, they were married at the time, he just celebrated 7 years. And she had severe liver disease from alcoholism.
When?
Grady. This was 7 years ago when she came in, and she's healthy and remarried and has her health back. It was just amazing because she was in the hospital. She was dying of cirrhosis. Still another experience. A woman's voice came faintly over a long distance from Virginia. She wanted to know if her husband's company insurance was still in force. 4 days before, he had hanged himself in his woodshed. I've been obliged to discharge him for drinking, though he was brilliant, alert, and one of the best organizers I've ever known. Here were three exceptional men lost to this world because I did not understand alcoholism as I do now. Look at this. What irony. I became an alcoholic myself. It's contagious. And but for the intervention of an understanding person, I might have followed in their footsteps. My downfall cost the business community unknown thousands of dollars, for it takes real money to train a man for an executive position. This kind of waste goes on unabated. We think the business fabric is shot through with a situation which might be helped by better understanding all around. Now here in the next few pages, he's going to talk about how he talks to employers, but it's really how we talk to each other. How do we talk to the new alcoholic? How do people relate to us? He says, nearly every modern employer feels a moral responsibility for the well-being of his help, and he tries to meet these responsibilities. This may have been true in 1939. It was a different world, but now in the big corporate world, I don't know how much the bosses are connected to the people under them. They do want us to get help, but it's not the same close relationship that it was in those days. But there are people, I think, in every corporation or business that you could go to if you needed help. Mm-hmm. That he has not always done so for the alcoholic is easy to understand. To him, the alcoholic has often seemed a fool of the first magnitude. Any fools in here? No? Okay. I was a fool when I look back at some of my thinking was so foolish. And then I took foolish actions as a result of my thinking. Because of the employee's special ability or his own strong personal attachment to him, the employer sometimes kept such a man at work long beyond a reasonable period. Some employers have tried every known remedy. In only a few instances has there been a lack of patience and tolerance. And we, who have imposed on the best of employers, can scarcely blame them if they have been short with us. And so here, for instance, is a typical example. An officer of one of the largest banking institutions in America knows I no longer drink. Now, this may happen to you. People may know you're in AA. They may have friends, relatives, employees, and they may want your help. And so you may be asked to do something similar to what he's doing here. One day he told me about an executive of the same bank who, from his description, was undoubtedly alcoholic. This seemed to me like an opportunity to be helpful. So I spent 2 hours talking about alcoholism, the malady, and described the symptoms and results as well as I could. I don't know if any of you could really talk for 2 hours. Of course, I could because I'm a blabberer. But he really knew the disease, and he was, I'm sure he was very capable of doing this, because we do have a malady. And you can you describe the symptoms to people, and can you describe your results? Isn't that what we have to do with new people, right? Mm-hmm. And his comment was very interesting, but I'm sure this man is done drinking. Sounds like a wife or a husband. He has just returned from a 3 month leave of absence and has taken a cure. Looks fine, and to clinch the matter, this is it. The board of directors told him this was his last chance. So of course he wouldn't drink, right? But remember Jim, remember Fred, remember the man of 30, and yourself. The only answer I could make was that if this man followed the usual pattern, he would go on a bigger bust than ever. See, alcoholism, there's no power. The man had no power within him. I felt this was inevitable and wondered if the bank was doing the man an injustice. Why not bring him into contact with some of the alcoholic crowd? He might have a chance. Isn't that what AA was supposed to be? A place where people could go. The initial meetings, there was a groups of 8 or 9 people. The wife would go. The husband might eventually come. The family would be there. The meetings were once a week, but they met all the time and had a community. So we are a chance for people without hope. We have to remember that. I pointed out that I had nothing to drink for 3 years, and this in the face of difficulties that would make 9 out of 10 men drink their heads off. Why not at least afford him an opportunity to hear my story? Oh no, said my friend, this chap is either through with liquor or he's minus a job. Here's a great line. If he has your willpower and guts, he will make the grade. Yeah, willpower is never effective. You know why? It's the wrong will. It's my will. God's will is effective. But if it's my will, it'll never be effective. Why? Because my mind will tell me it's okay to drink. Why will it do that? When I've sworn that I'll never drink again. Anybody swear they're never going to drink again? Did they ever drink again? Well, you must have said it was a good idea. Well, why does your mind say you can drink? Because it can't see what it's going to do to you, only for you. Once you decide you're an alcoholic that you want to drink, you focus on the effect, the ease and comfort, and you can't recall the calamity that's going to happen as a result of it. And you tell yourself a lie that this time it won't bother me. Anybody have that? So if that's your problem, you need another will in your life. You need God's will. I wanted to throw up my hands in discouragement, for I saw that I had failed to help my banker friend understand. People don't understand that this is, they don't know what we do here. They think it's something happens. But what we're really doing is we're reading a book about God, right? And how we have a relationship with God, and we have God's power to live, and then God will give us the answer if we decide to drink. He'll say, bad idea. Has that happened to you? It's happened to all of us, hasn't it? He simply could not believe. And then I wrote something here. Doesn't this really... our message should be that we should be grounded in the steps in the book, you know? And so he says, I simply could not believe that his brother executive suffered from a serious illness. There was nothing to do but wait. And here's a really good paragraph. Presently, the man did slip and was fired. I think this is where the word slip came in. Following his discharge, we contacted him. Now look at this. Without much ado, he accepted the principles and procedure that had helped us. He was willing. He was defeated. He had surrendered. He's undoubtedly on the road to recovery. And what happened, we talk about people slip. But all that is untreated alcoholism. And like, well, sometimes you hear me, oh, this one went out, you know, like, oh, you know, bad guy or something. That's the disease. That's what we do. Alcoholics drink. We have no power to quit. And sometimes we get a little spiritually arrogant about the people who relapse, but it could be me. It could be me tonight. We have no power against alcohol on our own, and we have to remember that and look at these people as powerless people who need our help. And notice he accepted the principles and procedure that had helped us. So he was already starting the process of sharing their experience on what they did with someone else. And then the road to recovery, remember, it's a broad highway, remember, open to all who seek him, right? And remember, we walk day by day down the path of spiritual progress, hand in hand. And I think that's what we're supposed to do at the meetings. To me, this incident illustrates lack of understanding as to what really ails the alcoholic and lack of knowledge as to what part employers might profitably take in salvaging their sick employees. We're going to skip the next paragraph. We're going to go down to when dealing with an alcoholic, there may be a natural annoyance that a man could be so weak, stupid, and irresponsible. Even when you understand the malady better, you may feel this feeling rising. And sometimes I think that's what we get. We get frustrated with people who don't stay because we know this will help them. But we should always do it out of love and not out of criticism. I look at the alcoholic in your organization as many times illuminating. Is he not usually brilliant? Well, yeah, there you go. Fast-talking, imaginative, and likable. Remember, an alcoholic wrote this. When sober, does he not work hard and have a knack of getting things done? If he had these qualities and did not drink, would he be worth retaining? Should he have the same consideration as other ailing employees? Is he worth salvaging? If your decision is yes, whether the reason be humanitarian or business or both, then the following suggestions can be helpful. Now, this is where the doctor's opinion was very helpful when he wrote his article, and in 1952 or 53, the AMA recognized alcoholism as a disease. Now, that wasn't really understood by the insurance companies until around the 70s when they realized that people's insurance would cover this. So then the hospitals decided that they would have treatment centers and they could bill for it. And in the 80s, I went to treatment, a place that had 80 people in there all coming in and out. They couldn't fill the beds fast enough and they got paid for the 30 days, and it was a big money maker. I'm not saying it was bad or good, but it was a real big money maker. And it changed. Joe and Charlie said it changed. It got away from the meetings and the book to the treatment centers for the initial treatment. And it's not that it's good or bad, it just changed. Nowadays, they don't pay as much, so the inpatient treatments have faded away, and now there's the outpatient treatment. Can you describe the feeling that you're dealing only with habit and stubbornness or weak will? And so we have to discard that feeling. It's a spiritual malady, right? It's an obsession of the mind and an allergy of the body. And the mind, obsession of the mind, cannot be treated by the person who has that mind, right? Greg was texting me yesterday about the meeting. We talked about that, about our minds and what we have to accept and truly believe. And I remind me of the expression, you can't treat a sick mind with a sick mind, remember? People used to say that all the time in AA. And so my self-knowledge won't fix it. My intuition, my awareness won't fix my obsession to drink. And it certainly won't treat my spiritual malady. If this presents difficulty, rereading chapters 2 and 3, which chapter 2 is There's the Solution, and chapter 3 is more about alcoholism. We're going to be studying that on Wednesday night, right, Wednesday, yeah. And that tells us about, chapter 3, more about alcoholism, tells us about the queer mental twist that occurs in every alcoholic right before they drink, and that cannot be treated except through a relationship with God. It says, if you concede that your employer is ill, can he be forgiven for what he has done in the past? Can his past absurdities be forgotten? Well, we learn to forgive, right? And we hope we can be forgiven. But in the business world, it's sometimes different. They have certain rules and policies. Can it be appreciated that he has been a victim of crooked thinking directly caused by the action of alcohol in his brain? Now, I think I had crooked thinking before I drank. And after I drank, I had crooked thinking. But I think what they're talking about here, people who are alcoholics for years and drinking all the time, their minds, their thinking gets disturbed, right? And we don't see things, and that's because of the spiritual malady, and that's why we do the four steps, so we can look at our thinking, right? I will remember the shock, and I'm going to skip the next two paragraphs and go to 141. Is this okay? This is not to say that all alcoholics are honest and upright when not drinking. Of course, that isn't so, and such people often may impose on you. Now, here's some good stuff. Seeing your attempt to understand and help, some men will try to take advantage of your kindness. If you are sure your man does not want to stop, he may as well be discharged. The sooner the better. You're not doing him a favor by keeping him on. Firing such an individual may prove a blessing to him. It may be just the jolt he needs. And a lot of people will tell you that when they were confronted and that they were faced with the consequences, then they had that moment of complete defeat. And that sort of happened to me, and I know it's happened to others. And you said you had to give up. You couldn't go on anymore. So it may help them hit their spiritual bottom. I know in my own particular case that nothing my company could have done would have stopped me. For so long as I was able to hold my position, I could not possibly realize how serious my situation was. Had they fired me first and had they taken steps to see that I was presented with the solution contained in this book, I might have returned to them 6 months later a well man. The other thing is they talk about on page 96 about if the man doesn't want what you have, you need to let him go. And that's important to understand because sometimes we try to help some people and they don't want it. We want it more than they do. And I don't know that we're really helping them. Anybody in here as a people pleaser? Am I the only one? No. It's bad to be a sponsor when you're a people pleaser because you want to get angry at your sponsee, but then you want them to like you. So you're screwed, you know? And so I don't know that that's good, but like Mark's helped me with that, and my wife helps me with that too, because we want everybody to get better, right? We want everybody to be okay. But there are many men who want to stop, and with them you can go far. Your understanding, treatment of their cases will pay dividends. And I wrote, the more you know, the more you can do, the more you can understand. So that's why studying the book, Working the Steps, as you grow spiritually, you have more to offer. Perhaps you have such a man in mind. He wants to quit drinking. You want to help him. Even if it be only a matter of good business, you now know more about alcoholism, and so let's say that they're talking to us. We know a lot about alcoholism, don't we? And you can see that the person's mentally and physically sick. And why are we mentally sick? Well, I wrote, we believe our thoughts. We believe our resentments and our fears, and we believe right before we drink that it's okay, right? And we're physically ill because our bodies are damaged. But we also get physically ill just from the effects of the alcohol as well. State that you know about his drinking, that it must stop. You might say you appreciate his abilities, would like to keep him, but cannot if he continues to drink. A firm attitude at this point has helped many of us. And I think monitoring programs have been very helpful for people so that they stay helps them stay clean and sober long enough to get the spiritual gifts of the steps. Next, you can be assured that you do not attend the lecture, moralize, or condemn. That if this was done formally, it was because of misunderstanding. If possible, express a lack of hard feeling towards him. And this is what we should do with each other, right? And it says almost the same thing in Working with Others. If you look at those paragraphs, it's very similar. At this point, it might be well to explain alcoholism, the illness. say that you believe he is a gravely ill person with this qualification, being perhaps fatally ill, does he want to get well? And you know, I have you ever seen somebody who you knew was gravely ill? They're fatally ill. And you ask if they want to get well, and they say yes, with conditions. And that's usually alcoholics. Yes, I want to get well, but I can't come on Wednesdays. You know, I can't do certain things. They put, it says any length, or you wouldn't go to any length. And sometimes we, who are fatally ill, we put limits on what we want to do to get well. And just thinking about my whole 40 years of taking care of cancer patients, if I said, do you want to get well, and all you have to do is read this book and do everything in 90 pages, they'd be doing it. They'd be doing it that night. But somehow, I think when we're fatally ill, we can't see we're fatally ill. We can't constitutionally honest about our situation. Now, when you have cancer and you're in pain and you've lost 50 pounds and you can't walk, you can see you're critically ill. But an alcoholic can't see it. He can't see it in his mind. And that phrase, constitutionally capable of being honest with themselves, they can't see the hopelessness and futility of life as living it. Remember on page 25, like Norm likes, where they talk about there's a solution, they say when we came to believe the hopelessness and futility of our situation, then all that was left was to pick up the kit of spiritual tools. So if an alcoholic can see the truth about their situation, then they're on their way. And we talked about it yesterday in the spiritual exercises, second set proposition, that truly admitting defeat, truly accepting our situation. And I think we'll just read one more paragraph. Don't let me do two, Mark, okay? If he says yes, does he really mean it? See, how can you tell? Or down inside, does he think he's fooling you and that after rest and treatment, he'll be able to get away with a few drinks now and then? We believe that a man should be thoroughly probed on these points. Be satisfied he is not deceiving himself or you. And I think that's very hard to tell. One of the ways you can do that is you can ask somebody to do something and say, well, read doctor's opinion and call me tomorrow at 7 o'clock and see if they do. Give them tasks, see what they're willing to do. And then that'll tell you if they're serious about this or not. And then they talk about mentioning the book, and we'll pick up with that next week. I thought these are really good pages. A lot of really good information. This isn't read a lot at meetings, so I'll open it up and appreciate it. Thank you.